they said, no. You don't understand. Church is not essential.
Mm.
I tell you one thing. When that sentence was said, that's when all our lights went on. Something is seriously wrong here.
I am a husband, a father, a lawyer, a Christian, and a proud Canadian. I started this series because it was clear that our nation needs truth. Not just another biased narrative, but real information of substance. We need access to facts and the freedom to think for ourselves. I'm Leighton Gray, and this is Gray Matter.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Gray Matter. Well, as many of you know, I had the honor, really the privilege of representing some pastors, brave pastors in Alberta, who resisted COVID tyranny during the lockdowns in this province and actually suffered imprisonment in order to be true to their faith and true to their vocation as Christian pastors. Well, in Ontario, another such man was facing similar challenges and doing so every bit as bravely on behalf of himself and on behalf of his congregation and on behalf of all Canadians. And he's our guest today. His name is Pastor Henry Hildebrand. Thanks for being with us today, Pastor.
Thank you, Leighton, for having me. It's my pleasure.
I've read a lot about what happened with you in Ontario, and I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. Before I introduce you properly, I'm going to go, as we always do, to our framing aphorisms, which have been selected in your honor. The first one is, trust in the Lord with all your heart, unto thine own understanding in all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. That's from Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5. Our second quotation is from Charles Spurgeon, who wrote, often depression of spirit and great misery of soul are removed as soon as we quit our idols and bow ourselves to obedience before the living God. We must do this with all our hearts and all our souls, and then our captivity will end. Next, we have, see what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. That's from John chapter 3, verse 1. And finally, I found this recently from the Canadian coat of arms. It's Canada's motto. And a lot of people don't realize this. I sure didn't. In Latin, it's Amare usque ad mare. And it's based on the biblical scripture, he shall have dominion from sea to sea and from the river unto the ends of the earth. That's from Psalms chapter 72, verse 8. Well, who do we have in the show today? Well, Pastor Henry Hildebrand. He is a Mexican-Canadian religious leader, considered by some an activist and by others, at least Wikipedia, a conspiracy theorist. We certainly don't think that. About 30 years ago, he became a pastor of a fundamentalist Church of God congregation in Aylmer, Ontario. He has been involved in that vocation now for over 30 years, had the pleasure of meeting his son on our X platform during our live streams. And he made the connection with Pastor Hildebrand, and it's great to meet him here. Part of the reason why he's here is, of course, as I mentioned off the top of the show, is that in April of 2020, during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, he led drive-in services at his church, and despite strict gathering limits that were mandated by the province of Ontario, and later he faced some serious charges and really persecution in his home province that we're going to talk about today. So, Pastor Hildebrand, thank you to the program, and thank you for being with us. You've been on quite a journey over the past 3 or 4 years, haven't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We have gone through quite something.
What was it initially about the COVID-19 lockdowns and pandemic? Because obviously, you identified early on that something was really seriously wrong, just as Pastor James Coates did and Pastor Timothy Stevens, the ones I represented here in Alberta. But what was it that made you so certain early on that something was seriously wrong with what our governments were doing?
So, Leighton, what happened is, I should say, when it first started, I was wholeheartedly behind supporting the government and the efforts. I told the congregation we're instantly shutting down. We will be helping. We will be on standby, whatever we can do, assist wherever we can do. I mean, we're here for the community, right? We serve the community. So there was no lack that way. We were totally ready to do that, whatever it would take. So then when the first 2 weeks passed, which they asked for to flatten the curve, right? The first 2 weeks, no issues. Then when they didn't tell us that everything was fine. They didn't tell us yet the 2 weeks were good. Yes, the plague spared our town. Then it became suspicious because they said, okay, we will need another 30 days, but with no further explanation. And I didn't think too much of that. It was a little weird because, so the liquor store parking lot is busy. The grocery store parking lot is busy. Tim Hortons, McDonald's, it's all, but the church parking lot is supposed to be empty. It didn't seem right. But then we figured, well, we do need to gather. We do need to see each other. So what we will do is, we had heard that in the U.S. they do drive-in services. I thought, well, that's a good invention. We'll do drive-in services. I'll preach from the platform, and we'll turn the FM radio on, and people can listen in their cars. We'll keep their windows rolled up, make sure COVID doesn't get in there. And we should be all good. At least we can see each other. And we did that for two Sundays. And the police pulled up on the parking lot, and they were a little concerned, like, there's a gathering here, right? But then they checked. All windows are closed. People are in their cars. Looks all good. They showed thumbs up. Looks fine. Well, that went only for two Sundays. And then the third Sunday, that afternoon, the police called us, and they said, Pastor, we can't do this anymore. And I said, why would that be? And they said, well, we've got 15 complaints on Facebook, I think. They said 15 complaints that you were gathering, so we cannot do that anymore. That's when it sparked in me that I said, okay, so now we know that it's not COVID, because our parking lot is the safest in town. We have not broken any laws. People are in their cars, windows rolled up. Like I said, no other parking lot as safe as ours in town. And they're telling me we have to shut it down because of complaints. So then I asked them, I said, so how does this actually work? I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a judge. I'm a preacher. I said, how does this work? So if 15 people complain about Tim Hortons, would we close Elmer Tim Hortons or the liquor store? Is that all it takes is 15 calls? Then we can get the liquor store out of town? Or how exactly does that work? I mean, I was just basically asking for a friend, right? And they said, no. You don't understand, church is not essential. I tell you one thing, when that sentence was said, that's when all our lights went on. Is something is seriously wrong here. It's not about COVID. There is something behind you. So that's basically, in a nutshell, that's what happened to us. That's when we realized something else is wrong here.
Mm-hmm. And eventually, there were mandates imposed, and in fact, you were ordered by the Superior Court of Justice of Ontario to abide by all of these COVID restrictions. And then in May of 2021, you were found in contempt of court. And there was a judge, Judge Bruce Thomas, ordered the doors of the church to be locked, and fines of $117,000 were issued. That must have been a very, very difficult time for you and your family and your congregation. You want to talk about what you were going through at that time, and what permitted you to stay so strong in your faith and in resisting all of this tyranny?
Yes, Leighton, that was a very, very difficult time. I would not hesitate to say that it was definitely the most tumultuous time ever in my 33 years of pastoring. It's just, what do you do now? Now, this, like I said, we didn't do this overnight. At first, we were totally on board. We thought it's justified what they're saying. But by now, when you mentioned the date, by now this has gone on for a while. And by now we realize that it is a narrative that is being forced down on people. It's just not, the people aren't dying like they said they would. And of course, anywhere that somebody passed away, my condolences, I'm sorry for anyone that lost a loved one, but I'm saying what they claimed, what would happen, did not happen. And when you look back in history, when an upheaval was anywhere in the world, the church was never asked to step back and close down. It's when the people needed the church the most. It is during those upheavals. And How could we fail the people when they needed us the most? And I was greatly encouraged by pastors from Edmonton, James Coates and others. I thought that is the right way. That is the right way. And how can I? And then scriptures would come to mind like we must obey God rather than man. And I was thinking about the three Hebrews when they said everybody needed to bow down to the image. I thought, well, this is our day. Like, we better stand up like they did back then. But we, like I said, we did that I did not want to act carnal. I did not want to act fleshly in that sense. I wanted to do it in the best way possible. Of course, they told us, well, Romans 13 tells you that you're supposed to obey the government. But right. I think James Coates did really well in explaining that there's also, I always tell people, I said, there's also Acts chapter 4 and 5 that says we must obey God rather than man. And it so happened that the book of Acts comes before Romans. So that's just a side note. But anyway, so then when the judge said when they came and locked the doors and whatnot, and they find us. Actually, the total that they find us was $274,000, $500.
Wow.
That was my fines, personal.
That's incredible.
It was tremendous. Then the people in the congregation and whatnot. So the total that we paid out was $274,500. And at first we thought, well, I'm not going to pay it. I mean, I don't have the money. We're just not going to pay it. See, whatever. Maybe they want to put me in jail or whatever. But then the government proceeded and they said, we will go after each individual member of the church, the widows, the single moms, the small families, the young families. And that's where I drew the line in the sand. I said, no, you won't. And they said, we will. I said, you won't. Then I sent an email out or message out to the whole world. And I said, this is where we are. Whoever feels compelled to help us. And I don't remember Leighton exactly, but with less than 2 months, $274,500 came together from all
incredible.
Over the globe.
Yeah.
Came together,
the and Lord
we,
provides.
We delivered that money there, and we kept on having church services. And when they locked our doors, we did it out on the lawn, just whatever it took. But we have never been closer than during that time. And that's what kept me going is the little children, the young people, the elderly, saying, Pastor, we are behind you. We stand with you.
Mm-hmm. And eventually you brought a constitutional challenge, didn't you, to the constitutionality of these lockdowns. You argued that the COVID public health measures interfered with the religious freedom of your congregants and really everyone in Ontario and indeed all Canadians. Unfortunately, and I lived through this, your constitutional challenge was denied because the court found that that the denial of religious expression and freedom was reasonably and demonstrably justified because of a quote-unquote unprecedented health crisis, which, by the way, folks, the CDC in the United States has recently ruled after 3 years, has reclassified COVID-19 as just another type of common flu virus. But that constitutional challenge, that must have been a very interesting time for you as well. What are your memories about taking on the government in court?
I mean, you feel like you look at the Bill of Rights or you look at our charter and you thought, somehow I thought in the back of my mind, surely, I mean, such an important document, the Constitution, the very thing that Canada was founded up on, right? And it being so clear, being the first one, like Canada was founded on this, on God, on religious freedom. Surely it couldn't be overridden like this. But that was a rude awakening to find out that the government, I mean, they would hardly even hear any of these cases. And to my knowledge, none of the cases got anywhere. They just denied it. They said, no, there was reasonable cause for this. So that still to this day is a serious thing in my mind to think that that's how shallow it is. Like that's how little it takes for humanity and in this case, Canadians, for the hard fought freedoms in this country. That's all it takes is for a narrative, for a so-called pandemic. That's all it takes for the government, the courts of this land to override all of that and throw that aside. That's tremendous.
Mm-hmm. It's very frightening. And for that reason, many people, including yourself, joined in another type of endeavor outside of a courtroom in our nation's capital, in February of 2022, and that was the Freedom Convoy. And you were an important participant there. You want to talk about why you went to the Freedom Convoy and your experiences there, how that affected you?
So, Leighton, those 3 weeks are engraved in my mind. I will never forget. I believe I will never forget those 3 weeks. I have never firsthand seen with my own eyes how humanity operates when it comes down to it. The unity, the working together, the helping one another. I went there thinking that I was going there for the weekend. I got there on Friday afternoon, I believe. I just saw them all arrive, and it was beautiful how the police were waving them, the trucks in, show them where to park, right in front of the parliament, show them exactly how to line up and whatnot. It was beautiful, beautiful. The honking, it was just the sound of it was tremendous. So I thought by Sunday, I'm going to be back. I need to preach. I need to stand behind my pulpit at home, right? Well, Leighton, I never went home in 3 weeks. I stayed there. I just couldn't leave. I couldn't leave. The truckers and the pastor became like one heart and one soul. I mean, I just could not leave. I would walk out of my hotel. And of course, you remember it was in February. So it was bitter, bitter cold. We had like minus 30 at times. I had never heard of feet warmers and hand warmers. I thought gloves was enough, but they didn't do anything for us. So it was bitter cold. And yet in the midst of it all, a radiating warmth from one to another between thousands of people. I preached 3 Sundays in a row from the back of the truck there. Just the working together, it can't be described. I'm in the middle of writing my book here. Should be coming out in a couple of months.
Oh, great.
Just describing the 3 weeks in Ottawa took a chapter on its own. It's tremendous. It's tremendous. The truck driver is catching me outside, walking out of my hotel. Truck driver coming, walking up to me and said, "Pastor, would you mind having prayer with us?" Excuse me. It's a little emotional. But anyway, so we go there, and there's these 10, 15 truck drivers, and we're having prayer there together. I mean, where do you find that, right? And yeah. I thank God. I said, "Lord, I thank God you kind of put us out of our meeting houses and put us right on the street so that we finally learn how to do missions." So I've never been the same since, because my heart has opened up to this whole world. I have a desire. I have a burden. It's, "Lord, let me help me how to reach this world," because this time it was the truck drivers. And you know, Leighton, what really spoke to me during those 3 weeks in Ottawa was this. How is it that the pastors were too afraid to stand up and the truck drivers pulled up, and the truck drivers did what the pastors should have done? And I feel like, I know I'm making a bold statement, but I'm feeling like if the pastors had done what they should have done, it would have never come to this, because the government would have known there's no way that church is not essential. But thank God that there were some that stood up, and the government found out that church is essential.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it remarkable that all these legal challenges that were taken up in British Columbia and Manitoba and Alberta, the one I was involved in, and of course your case in Ontario and others. And yet what made the difference was people coming together in the way that they did in the Freedom Convoy, not in a courtroom, but, you know, just coming together, socially and really defying all of these mandates. And that seemed to make the biggest change. I want to pick up on this point, though, that you've made, Pastor, because I think it's important, an important one. I was involved in a project that resulted in a documentary movie called The Essential Church. And the pastors, the Alberta pastors I mentioned, really were featured in this. And the crux of the movie was talked about what is the church's role in society historically, going all the way back, hundreds of years, going all the way back to the Reformation. Mm-hmm. And part of the thesis of the documentary, if you've seen it, and I hope you have, is that, as you say, to a large degree, the churches really let people down. Mm-hmm. They weren't there the way they needed to be in times like this, the way that is talked about, obviously, in the Bible. Do you share that sentiment? And do you have an explanation for why the churches did not stand up for people in the way that they would have been expected to, according to Scripture?
So I think it is extremely important, like you mentioned at the beginning of this question, is we look back in history. So first of all, we would have to say long before there was government, there was God. long before that. So God is the author. God is the one. God is the one. The system, even the system that the government uses, they have received that from God's system, from God's structure, the very structure, the family structure, the government structure. So God was first, not government. So when we look back, that's what they were told. They were told, do this, do this. And they said, we cannot do that because the Bible comes first. And right. obviously, Leighton, Christians are people that obey the law wherever possible. They tell us where our property is. They tell us how fast we can drive. They tell us where we can build, where we cannot build. There's a bunch of things. And Christians are the first ones. Like I told you at the beginning, when this mandate came out, we were the first to shut down our church building and said, that's it, because there's a major, major plague coming and a pandemic. So we will do whatever it takes. But when it crosses, when the government crosses into God's lane, when the government steps out of their lane and interferes with God's commands, with his word, that's where you see the three Hebrews. That's where you see the apostles when they were told, don't return to the temple. And where were they the next day? Right where they were told, mm-hmm. you cannot be here. So mm-hmm. when the book of Hebrews tells us, forsake not the assembling of yourselves. Okay, so we knew we need to assemble ourselves. The word of God tells us that. And there's a reason why, because we need the uplifting. We need the edifying of one another. Right. So when the government steps in there, and that's why I think it was so sad what happened. And the reason why the church has failed, there can be no other reason but that their vision failed. Because we have 25 Bible verses engraved at our parliament building. And the one that you mentioned at the beginning is one of them, is engraved there. 25 Bible verses engraved at our parliament building. The one that's facing the Supreme Court says, where there is no vision, the people perish. So when we lose our vision, when we lose our significance, when it is more important to us how much money the government gives us, there's a website you can go on, you can check which church, how much money they received. God forbid that we would be a church that is tied to how much money we receive from the government. And the government was quick to offer money during pandemic and offer the churches money. We will do this for you. We can do this for you. I never received one dime from the government. Not only that, I got fined $270.
They did the opposite. Yeah. They fined enormous amounts of money. Yeah.
So I'm saying when God is no longer first, when the government, if our Prime Minister Trudeau can rule and say the churches will be closed, or whether it's Doug Ford or it's Jason Kenney, who actually had just said, any country in the world, if you have religious persecution, come to Canada. And then he jails his own pastors. Anyway, that was a chapter on its own, but that was tremendous. Mm-hmm. So my hope is that pastors would recognize that it was the very wrong thing to please the government, because the government took a chance to see, let's see what the churches are going to do. And unfortunately, the government was right in that they noticed that most pastors would bow, that they did, because had they not, the government would have never succeeded like they did.
Mm-hmm. Recent guest we had on this show is an American author, a Christian author named Eric Metaxas. You're probably familiar with some of his books. He's written, brilliant biographies of Martin Luther and Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
And, I love his book.
Right. Yes. And he's also written, his most recent book is called A Letter to the American Church. He's now produced it into a documentary film. But Eric talked about that book on this program. And the thesis of that book is this, and I'd appreciate getting your take on this. Because he studied what happened with Dietrich Bonhoeffer in Nazi Germany, Eric basically writes a letter to the American Church saying, you know what? There are a whole number of really serious and dangerous symmetries between what's happening right now in the West in terms of the Christian church and what was going on in Germany during Dietrich Bonhoeffer's time in the 1930s. And what Eric says is that this is a crucial time where churches must answer a call to action that is biblical in proportion, biblical in magnitude, biblical in importance. And that if we don't, we're going to find ourselves we're going to be in a situation where we lose entirely the right to worship God openly and that we're going to be back to ancient Christian times when we're worshiping underground. What's your take on what Eric Metaxas has to say in that regard?
So I read that and I found it extremely accurate and extremely well said, what Eric was saying there. Because what happens is the similarity that we have here is, so in Germany, we saw what happened. The pastors thought, or they looked at it, the pastors thought, well, they're taking these men, or they're taking the businesses, they're doing this, but it's not me. It's not me. Pastor Neumoller said.
Yes.
He said, well,
first
it's,
they
it's
came
not
for
me,
the,
right?
Yeah.
First they came for them. First they came for that. So the similarity we have here is, to me, it's striking. It's scary to see. So this, to me, this was a test run that they did here in Canada with the churches. So they didn't forbid us that we couldn't have the Bible. They didn't forbid us that we couldn't. They said, you can have, they actually legalized after a bit, after we fought that in court, we won, that we could have drive-in services, right? So they said, you can have drive-in services. Let's do it digital. You can visit the elderly digitally. You can pray for them on a computer or whatever. But this was a test run. The reason I'm saying it now, look, 3 years later, what are we dealing with now? What are the bills looking like that they're pushing through now? Now it is saying you cannot quote scripture,
right?
Because you can be held in contempt if you. That's why I'm saying, what will it take for us to wake up to recognize that was the beginning of it? That was the beginning of it. Just to see, can these people be shut down or not? Can we close their mouths or not? Will they actually obey God rather than man or not? That's why I think it's of utmost importance that we wake up to that fact.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were speaking just a moment ago about Bill C-367, which is actually an act to amend the criminal code, if you can believe it. And you posted about this on your X page, that this bill is actually being debated in Parliament, which could criminalize quoting scriptures. And you've said very openly and very consistently with everything else you said, well, I'm just not going to obey this because my fundamental allegiance is my call is to God. But how do you explain this? Do you see that bill and, of course, the new Bill C-63 that the Liberals are bringing in that is going to basically criminalize any type of speech that the government doesn't like as hate speech? Do you see these as outgrowths of the COVID era, as sort of we're heading on a progression into totalitarianism? Or what's your take on this?
I totally see it as that, because that's why I said, look where it began and look where it's going. They are doing, they know their time is limited. They're doing whatever they possibly can to push through and do this. And it seems to me that they understand that who they're fighting is God. And why I feel so strong about what I wrote about that bill as well, I openly, and I'll say that here right here, is I absolutely will not obey that. And there's many others that will not obey that. Our very country was founded on God. So we are leaving, when we leave the foundation, these are fundamental things. Fundamental things. When we leave the foundation, if we remove the foundation, the house will fall. That's why the house, figuratively speaking, that's why the house is falling, because we're removing the family structure, we're removing the faith structure. When we do that, it will not stand. It will not stand. Mm-hmm. It cannot stand. And I think they will do whatever they can. They know that election is coming up. I don't know I'm hoping that the Conservatives will make it, just so that we have at least a break from this tyrannical thing that is going on right now. I'm glad for every privilege we have in this country, but I'm very disturbed about how they're touching, how the government is directly moving into the lane of, I'd say, God's lane, where God has set the parameters and had set, this is it. And like I said, our very Constitution, our Bill of Rights, I mean, what did the Honorable Diefenbaker say? I am a Canadian, a free Canadian, free to worship God. Where is that? And our Prime Minister's daddy, he signed this. We still have it, our charter. His daddy signed it. So, and the first thing you see in the charter is the freedom of religion, freedom to assemble, freedom to speak. I'm saying, people, it is time for us to rise up without arms, We're not armed. We're not violent, but we are a powerful, powerful army because we are of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Jews have a saying that you might have heard, that where God is, men are free, and where God isn't, men are slaves. And this seems to be the mantra of this government, and frankly, some other governments, provincial governments, municipal governments in this country. When you talk about that you will not obey an unjust law, a law that violates natural law, you mean it. In fact, you actually ended up having to plead guilty to one count of the pandemic restrictions, and ultimately you were forced to pay fines of $52,000. So when you talk about that, you're serious. And more than that, you haven't stopped. You didn't stop with COVID and the convoy. Recently, you were involved in a very, very important event in the United States called the International Crisis Summit. Something that you got to say to sort of open that summit.
We need massive reforms to remove the power of public health units, medical officers of health, and the alphabet soup of agencies and government to unilaterally infringe on the freedoms of citizens to make their own choices when it comes to their bodies, their families, and their faith. I am reminded of the words of my dear friend and brother, Stephen Hargrave, in his book, Hustling Backward. Civil governments have often withheld rights from their citizens, which nature and humanity demand. Civil governments have often extended rights to their citizens, which nature and humanity do not. Civil governments grant rights which transgress humanity while removing human rights in the name of civility.
I'm interested to know, what were your impressions? What did you think about being there? Obviously, you got to meet some very interesting people, some people very powerful in American government, some people who have made a significant difference during the COVID period. But do you want to talk about your overall impressions of the summit that you recently attended in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, Leighton, it was a monumental thing, if I may say it, if that's the right word to use here, but it was tremendous. For me, it was an amazing, amazing eye-opener in more than one way. So it was, for me, it was extremely encouraging, and I'll tell you why. When all of a sudden you see a shift from being called a fringe minority and you're being spit on, so to speak, and despised, and all of a sudden you see people from all over the world. You see doctors, nurses, lawyers, scientists, congressmen. All of a sudden you see them and you get this fresh air, like talking about fresh air, figuratively speaking, you know, that we got there where you understand. I mean, Dr. Malone, who is equal to Dr. Fauci, just on the opposite side of this narrative, like right. Somebody's... a doctor that is of reputation. I mean, Leighton, it was no longer Pastor Hildebrand is here, and he's no doctor and he's no lawyer, and he's trying to stand up for what he thinks the Bible says. All of a sudden, I have these people that doctors that know about medicine, doctors that lawyers that know about the law, and scientists that know about science, and I can sit there and I can listen to their speeches. I sat there, I listened for 10 hours straight, so to speak, all day long, listening to extremely important data that is being put forth that has been proven over the last 2 or 3 years. So ICS made a powerful impression on me, and it was a high honor for me to meet even different leaders from different countries and to see their stand that they're taking for the different things. So very good. There were some real highlights for me to meet the people, the producer of the film, Sound of Freedom, the person that it was a great honor to meet the doctors, the different ones, Simone Gold, who spent 60 days in prison because of her stand. I felt highly honored. It made a very, very big impression on me.
I understand why you were down there. You actually took time to attend CPAC as well, and you got a chance to hear Donald Trump speak. What was that like?
Very interesting. I had always, of course, I think everyone at some point, you would like to see him in person. And I had wanted to do that. I thought, well, since I'm here, I stood in line and I waited my turn and got a seat and I was able to see him. What impresses me, and this is where some people might differ with me, but what impresses me about Donald Trump is not maybe so much just what he says and just what he doesn't say or whatever. What impresses me about Donald Trump is that he's a man. What impresses me is that he stands and unashamedly so and calls it for what it is. To me, that is, I'm not a politician. I'm not interested in politics in that sense. But what I love is if a person, whoever that is, whether that is at the ICS or whether that is one of the senators or whether it's Donald Trump, what I like, or Vivek is another one, Ramaswamy, what I like is if somebody, I guess in plain English, has the guts to stand up and say, and I ended my speech there when I preached on Sunday morning, the 30 minutes there, I said, here I stand, I can do no other, so help me God. That's Martin what Luther. Resonates with me is, where are the people? And Donald Trump is one of them, and I appreciate for every good thing that he does.
Yes. Coming back to the ICS summit, this, I understand this was the fifth year. And I'm curious to know about this. I watched some of the speeches and things like that. I saw you were there with your friend, Mr. Hillier, and Jason Kristoff was there, who was also a guest on our show. A brilliant guy. It really has a deep understanding of, you know, the psychological abuse that is being perpetrated on us right now. But the International Crisis Summit, coming away from it, what were identified as sort of the key crises that we are facing right now in the West?
Yes, this was their fifth, and this was the first time that the ICS was held in the U.S. I understand.
Really?
Before it was in Europe. But what I took away from it is, like I said, that we have these experts there that have the data on hand, have the experience, and let us know. They're basically just sharing with us, telling us this is what's out there in the field. They are not, these were the people boots on the ground, you know. They tell us this is what we are seeing, hearing, and dealing with at the present time. So it was extremely, extremely educational and very, very much needed. Now, what's also very important about that is that each of these people that spoke there have thousands and some of them millions of followers, people that know them. So these were well-known people. I was there by invitation from Randy Hillier, which was a great honor for me.
Wonderful.
He also, I don't know if how much you heard about the Senate hearing on the Monday after the meeting. That also was extremely, extremely impressive. But yes, the speeches there from these experts was very, very well. And I felt, Leighton, I felt a heavy load on my shoulders Sunday morning when they said, Pastor Hildebrandt, now you open up the session this morning. And I thought, well, Lord, please help me. Like you've always stood by me. Please do it one more time. And I was really glad. I can testify to you that the Lord stepped in and helped. I preached on no other foundation can be laid than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. And I was extremely happy. The lawyers came to me afterwards. The politicians came to me afterwards. As soon as I was done, they came and they said, Pastor, you gave us hope. What you said there, and the lawyer said, was a lawyer from Switzerland. He said, Pastor, what you said there matches exactly what we're being taught in law, is that you cannot move away from the fundamental things. Anyway, it was quite the experience. Very, very positive. I felt like I came away that weekend. It felt like I had been there for weeks. I came away a different man.
Wonderful. You mentioned that Senate hearing you're in with Randy Hillier, who incidentally is going to be an upcoming guest on our show. What do you want to tell us about that Senate hearing was about? And understand it was a very important meeting.
It was a very important meeting. It was held in the Kennedy Room right there at Capitol Hill. So 4 hours were set aside from 9 to 1. And I cannot thank Senator Ron Johnson more. I cannot thank him enough for what he did, it's like one of the speakers there said, one of the ones that testified, he said, I forgot what his name was, he said, Senator, we need 99 more senators like you. You know, they have 100 in total. Yeah. He said, we need 99 more like you. A brave man, a real brave man. The 4 hours went by like 20 minutes. It was so helpful. And the speakers did exceptionally well. Randy did just an outstanding job in describing what had happened, what we have gone through, how it was. And of course, I understand that will be documented. That is documented. That will be good. That goes down in the books. So it was very, very well. I wish I could. I'm a pastor, so I'm trying to describe it to you in the best way possible. But the Senate hearing was outstanding.
Well, hopefully, it's an experience that'll make its way into your upcoming book. Meanwhile, in Canada, and I know I realize you're not a politician, but like many of us, you've sort of been thrust into the limelight. We have a situation in Canada now where obviously we have the most unpopular government in recorded history. According to a poll that I saw yesterday, there's only a 1% chance that Justin Trudeau will be reelected. The CPC, Pierre Poilievre's party, is just increasing in popularity, both by default, but also by some of the positions that they're taking, which are showing some signs of, shall I call it, common sense. And you commented on this in a recent post on February 21st. You said, I'm amazed at the widespread silence from women, at the blatant erosion of their standing in society, personal safety and privacy by degenerate men invading their spaces. And you say, rise up, women, and call this behavior by sick men what it is, an insult to every woman. And you were commenting on Pierre Poilievre, he gave it what was part of his common sense agenda. He said that female spaces should be exclusively for females, female sports, female change rooms, female bathrooms should be for females, not for biological males. I have a kind of a two-part question for you here. Do you see this sort of speech from Pierre Poilievre as something that is promising for Canadians for the future? And also, why are you so concerned about the situation that, the attack that womanhood is under in our society?
So in answer to your first question, I am very hopeful that Pierre Poilievre will make it. I am not a politician. I'm not in politics and I'm not debating politics, but obviously we are praying for a leader that would stand up for our God-given freedom, for stand up for the Christians as he should be, for our faith and so forth and so on. You know, in all due respect to him, I have a lot of respect for him. Maybe he's a little bit late to the show, so to speak. We would have hoped that he would have clearly stood up for the truckers because they deserved it. I think he's afraid, unfortunately, as politicians usually are, they have to check where does the wind blow right now, so they have to make sure for their votes. That's one thing that I'm so blessed. I wasn't voted in and I can't be voted out because it takes a calling from God, right? So right. I think that's where he is at a disadvantage. But I'm glad that he's coming around. I'm really glad he's coming around. It took a little bit to get there, and I'm glad he spoke up for the spaces for the women. But I am very concerned why our women in this time are allowing the sick man to do what they're doing, because it is an insult on womanhood. Mm-hmm. It's nothing less than an insult on womanhood. And that should not be allowed. And it should be the women that are standing up and saying, we won't have this. Like, why are they allowed? Why are the men allowed to be in there in their showers and in their competing games and whatnot? They should be chasing them out of there and telling them, I mean, it should take no police. It shouldn't have to come to where David Menzies has to go in there and chase the man out of there or trying to, right? So the women should say, look, you don't belong here. What are you doing here? So I am very concerned about that because, again, it is a direct attack on the structure, on God's structure of the family. It's a direct attack on that.
Yes.
20 years ago, 50 years ago, people would have thought, The Honorable Diefenbaker, he would have thought we were sick in our heads that we thought that we're what we're dealing with now, right? So I think it is. It should be a wake up call to any of us, doctors, lawyers, nurses, any of us. We should be up in arms, not literally as far as arms are concerned, but you know what I mean. We should be concerned and saying, let's protect our own structure. Our the very fabric of our structure is being torn. You know. Anyway, I almost started to preach here. I don't mean to get too passionate here.
You preach. That's people watching. They want to hear that from you. You know, but you put your finger squarely on a very important distinction. And today, a lot of people don't realize some of these important differences between, let's say, a liberal approach and a small C conservative one. And I'm talking small L liberal. Sure. Liberals believe that the constituent element in a society, in a free society, is the individual. But in fact, that's not true. And we're seeing it right now, that leads to nihilism. That leads to soji in schools. That leads to people, becoming desperate and despondent and accessing things like MAID. That leads to people allowing their children's body parts to be chopped off, allowing their children to be mutilated. That's where intense focus on the individual leads, and actually the worship of self is the first sin. That's what the serpent whispered into Eve's ear, isn't it? Conservatives, on the other hand, they believe what you just said, that in fact the constituent element in a free society is the family, and I expect you to agree with me that so much of what we're seeing, especially from the Liberal government in Ottawa, is fundamentally an attack on the structure of the family. And this attack upon women is really an oblique attack on the family, because as everyone knows, if we don't have women, we don't have mothers. Without mothers, we don't have families, right?
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. It is a direct attack on the structure of the family. And therefore, it is a direct attack on God. It just is. Mm-hmm. And that's what I keep bringing up is, have we forgotten what is our very foundation in this? On the American bill, we have "In God We Trust." So, Mr. Right. Biden, do we trust in God or do we not trust in God? Where is it? And when I was in Washington, we talked to different people and we told them, we want to warn you in the U.S. We want to warn you. Look north. Look what's happening when you allow that. Don't go there. Don't go there, because look how fast we have come to where we are now. Our government is no longer there for the people. Our government has their own agendas, their own things that they're pushing for. And we know what our prime minister's agendas are. He's pushing hard. He's not representing the people. By now we know. I read this morning, it says two-thirds of Canadians, two-thirds are not woke. It's one-third of the people. So it's rapidly, it's not a fringe minority. That was a lie right from the get-go, like many other things are that he's saying. I should maybe just say right here, Leighton, I have no personal hatred, personal bitterness against anyone in this world.
But I hate
the system. I hate sin, and I do hate the devil passionately, and I hate whatever he does. And I want to rescue people from that, and I want to wake up the people and tell them, look, our prime minister is taking us down the wrong path. And it's up to us to demand of our government, look, that's not why you are there. That's not your job. Your job is there to represent the people. Your job is there to hold up what God has placed there. And you go read the 25 scriptures inscribed in the... Now, there's a bunch of construction going on at the parliament. Who knows what they're doing there right now? Yeah. I was there. I have seen them, and I love those Bible scriptures there because it reflects our foundation.
The prime minister, speaking of him, he recently said that if he had 5 minutes with Canadians, he could explain to us, you know, why we have the carbon tax and why it's necessary. But when I read that, it struck me that I don't think he's ever spent 5 minutes listening to Canadians. And, you know, coming back to Pierre Poilievre and your comments earlier, I think what you said is very astute. One of the important distinctions between Mr. Trudeau and Mr. Poilievre, as I see them, is that Mr. Poilievre actually listens. You know, he seems to be responding to and to be in tune with what Canadians are saying. And at least that's a promising sign. But that brings me to my other point that I want to ask you about. You know, we're talking about the concept of servant leadership, which is, I think, what you were saying. Justin Trudeau is not, and he's not unique in that. Servant leadership, in terms of understanding that, you know, you're put in a position there as a leader, you have an ordained role by God, and that your role is to serve the people. But it seems to me that too many political leaders don't understand this. They don't have this concept of servant leadership. And more than that, we don't seem to hear any politicians anymore, at least in Canada, and I don't think as much in the United States either, but perhaps to some degree down there, even talking about God. Why is that? Why aren't politicians talking about God anymore? And why should we be concerned about that?
So obviously you and I would agree that's the greatest error, and it's a grave error that they're committing. Again, it is our very foundation. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that what you said earlier resonates with me a lot is they are worshiping self. It's all about them. They don't serve the people. It's about them. They don't serve God. It's about them. When you actually, you look in the book of Timothy, and it tells us of what the times will be like in times that we're in right now, how people will be lovers of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think there was never a time, perhaps, where we see so much of that. And when people are lovers of themselves, they listen to themselves. They don't listen. I mean, our prime minister, like you said, very, very well said, he said if he had 5 minutes, well, he had 10 years to explain something, and it's still not coming out, you know? Yeah. And whereas Pierre Poilievre, he can eat an apple and listen to people, right? He can do two things at once. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? So yeah. I'm saying there's no reason, our prime minister has no reason not to listen, but he's obviously not listening because the trucks were in Ottawa honking for 3 weeks. He couldn't even hear that. Right. So I'm saying, what was the cry? The cry was a cry of oppression. The cry was, can we please provide for our families? Can we please continue bringing you, Mr. Prime Minister, can we bring your food to your table as we have been? Yeah. But that is the problem. Yeah. Selfishness like we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm. So let's come back to you for a minute and what you're doing right now. Obviously, you're still the pastor at your church. How's your congregation doing? Has it grown since COVID, or what's happening there?
We are very encouraged where we are. We are pressing forward. We don't regret any steps we took. I look back and I think, well, maybe sometimes I could have been less provocative. And if we go through it again, I'll try to do my best not to be provocative. But sometimes there's a fine line between taking a bold stand and being provocative. You don't mean to, but sometimes, but we're doing well. We have, you know, Leighton, one of the most amazing things to me, what has happened in the past 2 years in our congregation is this, where when atheists, people that were atheists, claim to be atheists, when they come and they start a brand new life, they get saved, they become children of God, and they now are part of our congregation, and they serve in the congregation. They're starting to preach. They're starting to help. If that isn't a miracle, I say to me, whatever we went through was worth it all. I'll never forget, I was speaking at Young and Dundas in Toronto at a rally years ago, at the beginning of COVID, and I was speaking there as I usually speak, passionately, from the bottom of my heart, and a tall man, heavy set man came to me and he said, sir, he said, I'm an atheist, but he said, you sure are tempting me. that's what we are here for, and that's what we want. So at one point in our congregation, of course, we didn't nearly fit in our building because people came from Cornwall, Ottawa, Kitchener, Toronto, Detroit, Windsor. So that was the peak of it. Back then people were just, even if they weren't interested in church, honestly, people weren't interested in church at all, but they said, Pastor, we're standing behind you. So since then, it's not that that has kept up, that 1,000 people are there, but we have grown since then. And most of all, we have grown spiritually. We have increased, and we are standing where we are. We are doing our best we can to mend with the community, because some people in the community were very upset with us. We are mending with the local police. We are talking with them and doing what we can. We are making wonderful experiences with people that vandalized our property, that broke our sign, came out lately. Somebody wrote me, and it was a person that had 2 years ago broken our sign. And the person said that they were so glad that God had changed them, that they're now reading their Bible, and that they're glad that we gave them another chance. Because I told the police back then, I said, don't charge them. Don't charge them. I told the person that had vandalized our property, I said, not only will we not charge you, but I said, you're welcome to attend our services. You're welcome on our property. I want to give you another chance in life. So those things are extremely rewarding.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you're about to put the finishing touches on your first book. So what's the plan there? Are you going to be doing a book tour and going around and talking about it and promoting your book sometime this spring and summer? Or what are your plans there?
So it all depends. There's so much to do, Leighton. As you know, we were recently at CPAC, and then there's other invitations. I'm supposed to go to Montreal. So I don't know how much time I will have for my book, but we're definitely planning a big day where we are inviting different people, where people like Randy and many others that have been strong supporters both ways. We have supported them. They have supported us. Preachers from across this country want to invite them. So we're planning for a big day of where the book will be presented and whatnot. As far as how much time I will have to travel and do that, remains to be seen.
Well, speaking of books, we've reached the point of the hour with you where we turn to something called the reading list. We've got two books that I'm going to recommend. Then I'm going to come back to you, Pastor, and get you to recommend a book or two or a resource that you would refer people to sort of further their understanding of some of the things you've been talking about with us today. The first book that I'm going to recommend today to add to our reading list is a new book from a man named Matt Walsh, who's a very well-known American podcaster. He's part of the Daily Wire group that includes people like Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson and Michael Knowles and Andrew Klavan. But this book is called Church of Cowards. It's a wake-up call to complacent Christians. And the thesis of the book is this. He said, Christians in the Middle East, in much of Asia, and in Africa are still being martyred for the faith. But how many North American Christians are willing to lay down their smartphones, let alone their lives, for the faith? He says, being a Christian today doesn't require much. He says, suburban megachurches are more like entertainment venues than places to worship God. The lives that Christians lead aren't much different from those of their atheist neighbors, and their knowledge of theology isn't much better either. And so he basically tries to expose the pitiful state of Christianity in North America today, and he lays out the stakes for us, for our families and our eternal salvation, which Pastor Hildebrand has been talking about today. And more importantly, he invites us to a faith that's a lot less easy and comfortable, but that is more real and actually more worth something. So the idea is to get away from spiritual junk food and get back to the type of faith that is nourishing. And the idea that, you know, being a Christian is the best thing this side of heaven. But you know what? It's not an easy life. It has never been easy to be a Christian. And if being a Christian is easy, then you're probably not living out your faith in the way that God intended. That seems to be the thesis of the book. Second book I'm going to recommend is someone written by a friend of mine who I admire very much. He's an Alberta economist named Tanner Knighty. You might have met him at some point, Pastor. And this is his second book. And Tanner has been a guest on our show. I hope to have him back to talk about this book. It's called Kingdom of Cain, Escape the Insanity of Progressivism. So Tanner is an economist, but he comes from deeply Christian roots. His father is a Christian pastor. And the thesis of this book is, he says, prepare to escape the insanity of modern progressivism with Kingdom of Cain. And so he relates what's going on right now all the way back to the book of Genesis and of course, what happened with Cain and Abel. He says, tired of watching leaders advance their ridiculous agendas, worn out by their absurd objectives influencing every aspect of life, look no further. Kingdom of Cain is a riveting journey that demands your attention. And what it is, it's not just a book. He says it's a call to action. And he confronts the problems of progressivism which we've talked about today, navigating its nonsense and prompting readers to examine the world in which they live. And the idea is, again, the solution that he offers is coming back to faith, coming back to natural laws, coming back to focusing on things like the family and the integrity of our communities, and living and working together peacefully and supporting each other. He says that's the antidote to the chaos of the Kingdom of Cain. So I mentioned that book in this context, and I strongly recommend that one to our readers, to our listeners and viewers. So, Pastor Hildebrand, back to you. I'm looking forward to hearing your recommendations for our listeners.
Would you guess what my first book is?
Yeah, I think it has 66 different books in it, maybe.
That's right. That's right. It's a nice library of 66 books. So obviously, the first book that I strongly, strongly recommend people not only to read, but place your life on it, put your stand on it. It is still the bestseller in the whole world. It is still the book, and that is our foundation that we stand on. Obviously, we know that. I would say, I'm hoping that as soon as my book is out, I would recommend people reading it.
We want to have you back to talk about it when you finish it. Yeah,
absolutely. I won't tell the secret right now yet what it is called, but I can tell you this much, that throughout the whole book, the theme is obeying God rather than man. So that's kind of the whole of my whole life. But that should be coming out soon. I think it will be a great, great help for people to see, why am I what I am? What brought me to where I am today? And then the third book that I would strongly recommend is kind of a book that I think gives people a strong hope and solution to what we're dealing with today. It was recently written by a good friend of mine. The book is called Hustlin' Backward. So H-U-S-T-L-I-N. It's on Audible. Hustlin' Backward. What he is showing us in that book is that when the worldly arrangement, the world, like we call it, the system of this world, claims that there's no more slavery, that that's all behind us, that everything is taken care of, there's no more respect of persons, there's no more discrimination or whatever, he shows extremely eloquently in that book what we are actually dealing with, what is true white supremacy. People might look at it and say, I don't hate black people. I got friends, they're black. No, that's not what he's saying. But he says, because really what you look at it, Leighton, tell me if this makes sense to you. When the truckers were in Ottawa, that's like they were the black people, and the white man sat in the parliament. That's what he's talking about in this book. It goes way, way deeper. So I would like I said, it's an Audible, easy to read. But that book shows the solution. That book gives you an understanding on where are we today and what is actually happening. And he deals with the COVID. The COVID was in the first year of it going on. So very, very good. And he also shows how governments have given people rights that go against human nature, and how governments deny human rights that human nature demands, and how governments, in the name of civility, deny human rights. Anyway, it's just really, really good to read.
Yes, sounds like an excellent book, and it's one that we don't have on our reading list yet. So we're very grateful for that suggestion. I wish that we could add your book to our list again. I promise that we will eventually, once you publish it. But Pastor, this has just been such a pleasant hour with you. We're so grateful that you took the time to sit down with us and talk about your life and your experiences and all of the work that God is blessing. I pray that he will continue to bless you and all that you do and your congregation. And I'm just very, very grateful that we have people like you in this country who share this faith and are prepared to and actually are called to walk it out and to be important actors in this fight to restore, you know, really God to his rightful place at the head of our state. That seems to me that's a big goal on your agenda, and you and I share that. And so again, we just really, really are grateful that you took this time to be our special guest today on Gray Matter.
thank you so very much for having me. It was my great pleasure to have this discussion with you.
Okay, all the best. God bless.
God bless you as well.